You are listening to the Forgotten News Podcast.
But before we begin, here are a few words about a couple of other podcasts that we think you might want to try.
For many of us, scary stories are more than just campfire tales and the stuff of horror movies. Some of us have actually lived it. Or perhaps some of us know someone who has. Or for most of us out there, we're simply curious about those eerie tales that balance on the edge of fiction and reality. The Night Owl Podcast is a monthly podcast featuring true tales of the paranormal. Join me, your host, Stephen Ballew, as I track down haunted places and personal ghost stories, dig deep into the mysteries surrounding them, and share it all with you right here. Each episode features candid stories straight from the mouths of those who actually experienced them. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. Visit thenightowlpodcast.com for more info. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter for sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes photos for upcoming episodes. And if you have a ghost story you'd like us to consider for the show, email us at thenightowlpodcast@gmail.com. Stay restless out there, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Hey everybody, I'm Noah Daniels.
And I'm JJ Crable.
And we're your hosts of the Real Hauntings Podcast. We bring on guests who share their first-hand encounter ghost stories and supernatural experiences. Now on to the trailer.
I've been warned to not tell this story, but I think because of the way it ends, it's okay to tell this story. Because some people say that with certain entities, to like speak of them or talk about them or in any way like portray them as powerful will attract them to other people. The creepiest thing about it to me is a lot of times it would wait for me to notice it. Like it would just lay its arm out like this and then I'd be like, where is it? Where is it? And then I'd see it and then it would just slither back.
Very clearly looked over and there's a large man standing in my doorway. Our father didn't live with us at the time, so I screamed bloody murder and my mom came running through the doorway and ran right through him.
I was laying in the bed feeling like somebody was watching me, and which didn't make sense because everybody else in the room was asleep and our door was closed and there wasn't anything particularly weird about that day. And I remember turning over to try to pull the curtain down over that corner of the window because it just, something just very weird. I just felt like this weird presence somewhere and it felt like it was coming outside. And I looked, and as I was trying to close the window, I looked and in the front yard of the church, there was just this black figure there.
Hey guys, if you like the trailer, hit subscribe to hear more First Encounter ghost stories and supernatural experiences, and email us your ghost stories at realhauntingspodcast@gmail.com.
Welcome to the Forgotten News Podcast. This is your window to hear true stories from long ago. Stories that once made headlines. Stories that people thought would be unforgettable. Yet those stories were soon lost in the sands of time or were buried deep in the dustbin of history. In this podcast, we shake off the sand and dust from those stories and share them here with you, as fresh as the day they were first told.
And now, here's your hosts.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to episode 66 of the Forgotten News Podcast.
Right now. Boom.
This is Jim.
This is Kit. Oops. Sorry, everyone. I'll answer this real quick. Hello? Oh, it's Jessica. Hi! Uh-oh. She says she can't join us on this episode because she's juggling too many things this week. Oh, well. It's okay. If you can't, you can't. Thanks for letting me know. Bye.
But she'll be with us next time, right?
Yeah, next time.
Okay, good to know.
Now, moving right along, I guess we need to give our latest apology for our unintentional delay in releasing a new episode. Specifically, this episode that you're listening to now. We really are sorry.
Yes, we are. But I'm pretty sure that you will not need to wait very long for our next episode.
However, we don't want to waste your time with a lot of tears and blather about why this episode was delayed.
So, let's just get started with our featured story.
Actually, we are going to tell two stories on this episode, just like we did on our recent mini episode.
But, like always, we are going to start with a short trigger warning. So, please listen, because we don't want anyone to be caught off guard.
So, in regard to our first story, the main thing that you need to know is that it indirectly pertains to the issue of domestic violence, specifically violence between spouses. And for that reason, we do not want to begin that story without also providing the following information to our listeners.
If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, you can call the nationwide domestic violence hotline. That's 1-800-799-7233. You can chat at thehotline.org or you can text START to 88788. All three of those are 24/7 free and confidential, and there are countless other resources on the Domestic Violence Hotline website.
Now, in regard to our second story, it revolves around the unsolved disappearance and murder of a 21-year-old college girl, approximately half a century ago.
The second story will be told by a guest narrator who will be identified afterward to avoid distracting from the story itself.
Now, finally, here is one last thing that we want to say before getting into our two featured stories on this episode. If you are of a nervous or sensitive disposition or get frightened easily, we advise you, calmly but sincerely, to simply turn off this episode now.
In addition, we do not recommend the remainder of this episode for children under the age of 14, because it could be upsetting or even frightening for young ears.
Parental discretion is strongly advised.
So, with all of that having been said,
on with the show. We are going to begin our first story by talking about underwear. Hey, stop that snickering. Listeners, in case you don't know, I can hear you. I happen to have special audio equipment that enables me to hear every word that you say. So, As I was saying, I'm going to be talking about underwear. No, not my underwear. Although mine are very cute. Actually, I'm going to be talking about men's underwear. Specifically, men's undershirts. And even more specifically, men's sleeveless undershirts. So here's the thing. This type of undershirt has a very peculiar nickname. And it's a nickname that is kind of ugly. And, well, let's get right into it. It is very common in slang for men's sleeveless undershirts to be called a wife beater. But why? How did it get that strange, terrible nickname? Well, if you look on the internet, let's say that you search on Google, you will find many articles that say something like this.
In the year 1947, in Detroit, Michigan, a man named James Hartford Jr. got into a heated argument with his wife. The argument escalated, and ultimately, he lost control of his emotions and began violently punching his wife's face with his fist. This attack quickly became more and more brutal, and she began screaming in pain. The screams were so loud and so agonized that several neighbors called the police, who arrived within minutes. Hartford was immediately arrested and brought to the police station. His badly injured wife was rushed to the hospital in an ambulance. A newspaper photographer happened to be at the station when Hartford arrived, and he snapped a dramatic photo of the arrested man, who was wearing a greasy, sleeveless undershirt, soaked with his wife's splattered blood. The next day, this photo was published on the front page of the Detroit Free Press, with the caption, "The Wife Beater." The photo was reprinted in newspapers throughout the U.S. during that week. And, as a result of that incident, the phrase, "wife beater," soon became an unfortunate slang nickname for sleeveless men's undershirts. And this name has remained ever since then.
Now, that is a summary of the typical information that you will find on the internet regarding the origin of the phrase wife beater in regard to sleeveless undershirts for men. But if you were to decide to look more deeply into this story, here is the actual reality. You will not find this alleged, widely reprinted 1947 news photo anywhere on the internet. Even when you search specifically for James Hartford, you will only find pictures of actors or male models wearing sleeveless undershirts. You will not find any mention of anyone named James Hartford in any article in the Detroit newspapers or literally anywhere else in the year 1947 or in any other year within the 1940s. Furthermore, the phrase wife beater in regard to this type of undershirt did not become common or popular in slang until the 1990s. You definitely cannot find the phrase anywhere in any newspaper, book, or other publication in this context prior to that time period. Finally, there is literally no evidence that the 1947 incident actually occurred. Instead, it appears that it was just made up by some unknown person who decided to create a wild story for a trivia website, or even possibly for a clothing or fashion magazine or webpage that doesn't do very much fact-checking. But honestly, this is just a guess. The true origin of the James Hartford story is totally unclear, and that's the best that we can say about it. However, there is a much more likely solution to the question of the connection between men's sleeveless undershirts and the phrase wife beater. I mentioned earlier that if you do a Google search on this topic, you will find many photographs of actors and male models wearing this type of undershirt. But there is one photo that will pop up much more than any other. Specifically, the actor Marlon Brando from the 1951 movie A Streetcar Named Desire, in which he portrayed a violent husband who bullied his wife and often wore a sleeveless undershirt. It seems highly possible that this classic movie was the actual origin for the phrase. Despite the long period of time between the release of the film and the time period decades later, when the phrase wife beater became slang for sleeveless undershirts. But once again, this is just a guess on our part. However, in this context, before we end this story, we want to be crystal clear about a couple of important things. First, we have no doubt that there was a man, or possibly even multiple men, named James Hartford back in the 1940s. But as far as a specific man who is at the center of this story, James Hartford, he seems to have been completely fictional. Now, with that being said, the second thing that we want to be 100% clear about is that domestic violence is not fiction. It was real in the 1940s, and it is real today, every day, between spouses and also between non-married people who live together, and we don't like it.
We hate it.
So, for that reason, and because we don't want you to need to rewind, here again is the phone number for the National Domestic Violence Hotline and other sources of help for people in similar situations.
If you or someone you know is experiencing domestic violence, you can call the nationwide Domestic Violence Hotline. That's 1-800-799-7233. You can chat at thehotline.org, or you can text START to 88788. All three of those are 24/7 free and confidential, and there are countless other resources on the Domestic Violence Hotline website.
We will now move on to our second story on this episode.
This is the story of the mysterious unsolved disappearance and murder of Donna Dahl. And just to be clear, that last name is spelled D-O-L-L. This is a very unusual case that will absolutely rattle your brain in trying to figure it out. And the reason for that is because it has a very striking detail, which you have definitely never heard in connection with any other true crime case. So, On that note, let's get into the story. Donna Susan Dahl was born in 1949 in Brookfield, Illinois, which is approximately 13 miles west of downtown Chicago. She grew up in a house with very strict parents who had high expectations for her. And, as a result, Donna became a very conscientious and energetic girl who was an amazing student in school. She was super smart with a ton of potential from the very beginning. Around the eighth grade, she developed a close friendship with Donna Charlotte. But to avoid confusion, we're going to call her Donna C. Now, Donna C. described Donna Dahl as
never wild. She was unworldly and innocent.
Donna C. remembered her friend, as a teenager, being burdened with responsibilities at home. Quote,
she basically took care of her younger brother and younger sister. Her parents always had chores for her to do. I mean, she was the one who cleaned the house, and the one who couldn't go out because she had to babysit. She was pretty well tied down as a kid.
She was extremely intelligent and driven in her academics from the start. In 1967, she graduated from Riverside Brookfield High School. She was 15th in her class and was a member of the National Honor Society. She then attended Northern Illinois University on a scholarship, where she was an honor student majoring in Russian. In the year 1970, she was 21 years old, a senior, with the goal of becoming either a teacher or a professional interpreter after she graduated. She also wanted to earn a master's degree. So, in the summers of 1969 and 1970, Donna attended Middlebury College in Pennsylvania to earn credit towards that objective. Now, although her classes were demanding and difficult, she made time for visits with friends and had begun dating. She also squeezed in a part-time job, weeknights at the Swen Parson Library, to earn some money. In addition, she had remained good friends with Donna C. for all those years, and she had been a bridesmaid at her wedding earlier that year. They continued to have a close relationship afterwards. In fact, the two Donnas had made plans to hang out together on the evening of October 2, 1970, after her shift at the library, because they had not seen each other in recent weeks. Since the one Donna had been in Pennsylvania, and the other Donna had been a busy newlywed. Donna C. was going to meet her at the library, and then they were going to go out somewhere and catch up on what was happening in each other's lives. Donna C. went to the library and waited and waited, but her friend Donna Dahl never showed. She later recalled,
I was supposed to pick her up, and we were going to talk about the summer and what had gone on, but she just wasn't there.
Now, at this point in time, Donna C. didn't think of it as any kind of big deal that her friend hadn't shown up. She thought maybe she had just forgotten or that something had just gotten in the way. After all, this was the 1970s, and since cell phones were not a thing, it was common back then for people to simply believe that someone's plans had unexpectedly changed because of some unknown reason. And it definitely wasn't unusual for a busy college student to get sidetracked and miss an appointment. However, on that same night, Donna Dahl also failed to return to the rooming house that she lived in. Then, after she was gone all weekend, as well as the following 2 days, she was reported missing at 11:30 p.m. to the police in DeKalb, Illinois, by friends who lived at the rooming house. So the police arrived and Donna's room was searched. Her clothes and suitcase were still there, as well as her most recent paycheck from the library, uncashed. She couldn't have had more than $10 in her pocket. However, Regardless of wherever Donna was, the police did not have any reason to suspect foul play. Instead, according to the detective who had written the original missing person report in 1970, Donna Dahl had a boyfriend in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, whom she had met the previous summer at an Eastern college. And so, based on this information, the police believed that it was a reasonable assumption that she had simply decided to make a visit. The man was married and was either separated or going through a divorce, according to information supplied to the police by Donna C. So, based on those details, the police believed that he might only have a limited amount of time for socializing, which meant that Donna Dahl possibly could have needed to leave on the spur of the moment to be able to see him. But this explanation did not make sense to her friends. For example, Donna C. could not think of any reason why she had left for several days without returning or not contacting her or anyone else. The response of the police to these concerns was that she might have been worried that someone might say something to her very strict parents, who likely would have vehemently disapproved of any such romantic relationship with a married man. The police also stated that they had no reason to suspect criminal wrongdoing because there had been no report of abduction or violence in regard to Donna. That was the opinion of Detective Don Burke, the police officer who investigated the original report of Donna as a missing person.
There's a difference between a witness seeing someone else taking somebody versus someone who was reported missing only 2 days after she was last seen.
And that was basically the police logic of the 1970s in regard to missing persons. It's not an abduction unless someone actually sees it happening. Ironically, it would later be learned that Donna and her boyfriend in Pittsburgh had no plans to meet, either that Friday or during that weekend. And meanwhile, one day after another has gone by with no sign of Donna. And Donna C. has become even more concerned once she learned from Donna's housemates that her prescription allergy medication had been left in her room. This was a very important fact because Donna had extremely bad allergies, so she needed to take this medication twice a day on a daily basis, or she would be constantly having uncomfortable, watery eyes and repeatedly coughing. Donna literally could not go anywhere for a day, let alone several days, without bringing her allergy medication. That was something that she definitely would not have overlooked to take along with her. The story of the disappearance soon became news, and articles were printed in various newspapers and was also reported on television. But, unfortunately, Donna's parents began getting prank telephone calls from creeps, including one cruel monster who called 6 or 7 times during the week, saying,
"I know where your daughter is,"
and then hang up. Sadly, this was the era when it was technologically impossible to trace the origin of a phone call unless the caller remained on the line for at least 3 minutes. Donna C.'s mother would sit with Donna's mom at night to help her stay calm by keeping her company. Meanwhile, Donna's many friends were doing all they could to help find her. Search parties were organized to look through the surrounding area to look for clues or answers. Then, at around 8:30 p.m. on October 11, 1970, three teens were on their way to a party in DeKalb and drove out to a cornfield on Nelson Road to pick up some beer that they had stashed there the week before. This was a popular spot for college students to drive to park and drink in that era before the dorms were co-ed, according to a newspaper article published in 1989. One of the teens in the car was Jim Ball, who was in his first year of college. He began walking through the tall grass that evening, near a ditch that was next to the road, when he suddenly saw a body under a tree about 5 feet away. He thought it looked too still and too pale to be alive. There were two girls with him who did not see it. He told them to go back and get into his car. Then he walked over to the body to take a closer look, and he had no doubt this person was dead. The three teens then immediately drove to the DeKalb Police Department and reported what they had found. The police followed them back to the location, which was about a mile west of the campus. So, the police arrive on the scene, and they see the body of a young woman. Now, here is the first weird thing about this case. But it is not the only weird thing, or the most weird thing. The body was fully clothed except for her shoes. She had a jacket on her upper body instead of the trench coat that she was last seen wearing. This was not Donna's jacket. No one knows where this jacket came from or who it belonged to. Donna's shoes, trench coat, and purse were never found. Later, at around 3 a.m., the body was identified by Charles Burke, a graduate student in the university math department. He was a friend of Donna and also someone whom she had previously dated. The police detectives had been pretty sure that this was the body of Donna Dahl, but now they knew for certain that they had found her. Ironically, one of the recent search parties had ended their search about a quarter of a mile away from where she was finally found. And that particular search had been organized by Burke and some of Donna's friends in the foreign language department. The death of Donna Dahl sparked widespread uproar among the public within the town. The community of DeKalb had always been considered as a safe rural area. So homicides, especially unexplained homicides, were very uncommon. After all, this was a county that did not even have a morgue. Some citizens began worrying that a serial killer might have secretly paid a visit to their town. Now, here is the next weird thing in regard to this case. The pathologist determined that Donna Dahl had been suffocated with a pillow or a plastic bag. But there were no strangulation marks on her body. There were also no fibers nor any other physical traces found in her lungs or airways which would be consistent with suffocation. There were also some mystery substances that were found, but the pathologists were unable to identify them or explain their presence. In addition, Donna did not have any visible signs of violence, which was considered to be an indication that she knew her attacker. It was also reported that she had been alive for at least 48 hours after disappearing. Now, as we have noted, there are some pretty weird aspects of this case. But the next detail is the one that nearly everyone says when they hear it. Wait, what? And here it is. When they were doing the autopsy, they found that Donna had recently eaten a large amount of potatoes. Specifically, about 5 or 6 pounds. Yes, you heard that correctly. Donna had consumed approximately 5 or 6 pounds of potatoes just prior to her death. What? Why? Now, this information was reported in news articles without comment at the time. However, over the decades since then, some people have wondered if she had been forced, for some reason, to eat those potatoes, possibly as some type of torture. Others have wondered if, maybe, she had some sort of eating disorder that she had managed to hide from her family and friends. But unfortunately, the truth in regard to this extremely strange aspect of the case remains unknown. Sadly, the identity of her killer also remains unknown over 50 years later. In 2010, Donna's younger sister, Becky Nemchuk, expressed her dismay regarding this fact. She said, quote, "There was no closure," unquote. The police did have a suspect, specifically a man who had been Donna's first real boyfriend, according to Donna C. She said that Donna had told her that she was planning to end her relationship with him because he was a nerd who did not have an intellect that matched hers. The man lived alone in an apartment very close to the spot on Nelson Road where Donna's body was found. According to Donna C., this man was an obsessed jerk who felt that he did not deserve to be dumped. The police believe that these facts might have given him a motive to try to force his girlfriend to not break up with him. When he learned that the police suspected him of the murder, he tried to kill himself by cutting his wrists. The cuts were deep and he lost a lot of blood. He was found unconscious and was hospitalized. Later, despite a strong interrogation by police detectives, his general attitude was,
"How could you possibly suspect me?"
He served as a pallbearer at her funeral and Donna was buried wearing a pair of earrings he had given her. In 1989, the man was tracked down by a newspaper reporter. He was then working in computer technology for a bank. The reporter asked if he would be interested in saying anything about the case. He responded,
"I have no comment,"
and immediately hung up the phone with a loud slam. The disappearance and murder of Donna Dahl has never been solved. It remains open to the present day.
That is the end of the story of the mysterious murder of Donna Dahl.
It's a totally wild case, and I just can't get over that crazy detail of the potatoes that were found in her stomach. 5 or 6 pounds. I mean, that's a lot.
That really is a lot, and I do not know why that would be found in her stomach. I don't know. The whole case seems crazy.
Well, I don't think there's any more that we can say.
It's a riddle inside an enigma wrapped in a mystery. But there is no statute of limitations on murder. So, if you happen to have any information that would help to solve this case, please contact the DeKalb County Sheriff's Office. The phone number is 1-815-895-2155. And on that note, before we move on, we again want to thank our excellent guest narrator and wonderful guest voices for both the wife-beater story and the Donna doll case. So please, come up to the microphone, take a bow, and tell our listeners anything that you want them to know about you.
Hey there, I'm Erin Summonsby. I'm a voice actor specializing in animation, audio drama, and narration, with experience editing audio and video. If you need a voice for your next passion project, let me make it my passion project too. I can be contacted from my website, summonsbyproductions.com. That's SUMINSBY productions.com. Thanks for listening and hope you enjoyed.
Hi, I'm Karen Corrado and I'm a voice actor. If you're interested in having me in your next production, you can contact me on castingcall.club/KarenM. That's KarenM. Or message me directly on Facebook. I'm Karen Corrado, KarenCorrado.
Hi, I'm Sharon Grunewald. I'm a voice actress and happy to be a part of the ensemble cast. If you liked what you heard and want to find out more about me, then I'd like to invite you to visit my website. It's www.SharonGrunewaldVA.com. That's Sharon Grunewald, spelled G-R-U-N like nice, W-A-L-D like delightful, V-A as in voice actress, .com. And while you're there, you can listen to my demos, you can look at my portfolio, and if you want to get in touch with me, there's a contact form and links to my social media.
Hey, everybody. My name is Frank Guglielmelli. I'm a Philadelphia guy, South Philly, for those of you who know Philadelphia. I'm a retired school teacher, and I've been doing voice acting for about 6 or 7 years now. I've done commercials, I've done e-learning, I've done interpretive reading, I've done reading stories. My favorite is doing audio dramas. I just love doing audio dramas. If you need a good male voice, you could reach me. I'm at gugie806@gmail.com. gugie806@gmail.com. I have a Discord, gugie#1219. You could reach me through Facebook. And if you're interested, you can go onto soundcloud.com and type in my name and you'll get all of my voice samples. You can go on YouTube and you can type in my name in the search and you'll get a list and some of all the audio dramas I've done. Thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
Hi, I'm Christian Newhouse. I'm a writer and voice performer with a particular interest in audio drama. I'm a playwright and co-creator of an interactive comedy adventure called You've Ruined a Perfectly Good Mystery, which you can learn about at its website, ruinedmystery.com. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so by email at c_neuhaus@outlook.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Glenn Haskell, a writer, producer, director, and voice artist. I like to create and help others in their creations. I've been a professional writer since 1995 and a voice artist for even longer. I'm a broadcast professional. I've hosted a morning show, much like I've done for the past 4 decades. It's been a blessing to provide audio for clients around the world, and I continue to do so on a daily basis. I'm just one of many working to provide content for audience consumption. But if you're interested in following what I do, you can find my author and voice acting page on Facebook. Just look for Glenn Haskell, author and voice actor. Glenn Haskell is GlennHaskall. After voicing for hundreds of audio dramas, it's clear that there are more stories to tell. I'm always interested in interesting characters. Let me leave you with this. When you find your dream, chase it. Catch it. Do something with it.
Thank you. You were just wonderful. Great job.
All of your voices were absolutely terrific.
Thanks so much.
Yes, thanks again, everyone. Now, We were planning on moving on to our semi-regular segment, Police Blotter and Court News, but unfortunately, we didn't have enough time to put it together for this episode. So instead, we are going to feature a short 1951 episode of an old-time radio show called Incredible But True, which tells a very mysterious true crime story about a bank robbery.
The length of this story is approximately the same length as a typical police blotter segment. So we hope that it will be a more than adequate replacement on this episode.
And with that being said, here it is.
To most readers of the daily newspapers, bank robberies are common and rather unmysterious events. But there is on record the strange story of a bank that was robbed without a gun, and apparently without even a robber.
The Midland Bank in Blackpool, England, is what is known as an eminently sound institution. And the only dubious incident which mars its long and honorable record of service is the one that occurred on August 6, 1926. It was on that Saturday, at high noon, when the doorman was just closing the doors, that one of the Midland's regular clients entered the bank with a large bag under his arm. He was Mr. Lloyd Fenwick of the Corporation Tramways Department.
Morning, Mr. Fenwick.
£800 in here, all treasury notes.
I'll make out the slip for you, sir. But you'd better open the bag yourself.
I don't know who else could open it. It's got a new type of lock on it. No one could possibly open it unless they know the secret, and I'm the only one who knows it. I've got another bag out in the motor van with all the silver in it. Safe enough to leave this one on the counter, I suppose.
Oh, yes, of course. Just leave it where it is, sir.
As he turned away from the cashier's counter, Mr. Fenwick noticed that the bank was still quite crowded. Nevertheless, since it was now past the noon hour, the doorman had locked the doors to prevent latecomers from entering. As he unlocked them for Mr. Fenwick, the tramway's official remarked,
"No need to lock up again, my friend. I'm coming right back in."
But the doorman was a man of caution. During the few moments that Fenwick was gone, he stood by the closed doors, his hand on the key. When the official returned to the cashier's window, he carried another bag, smaller than the first one, in his hand.
"We'll count the treasury notes first, sir, if you don't mind."
"Makes no difference to me. Well, give it to me. Your bag with the treasury notes. You must have put it away."
"I? Oh, no, sir. It's lying right over here where you..." "Good Lord, sir. It's gone."
Yes, the black leather bag had vanished from the cashier's counter. What's more, it had vanished from the bank itself. The police were summoned, but a most thorough investigation failed to reveal its whereabouts. Fenwick, the cashier, and the police themselves were utterly mystified. At 3 o'clock that same afternoon, Patrolman Cook was strolling down Needham Lane, just a block away from the Midland Bank.
"Hello. Someone must have lost a bag. I say now, could this be the one what's missing from the bank?"
Tucking the bag under his arm, Patrolman Cook made his way quickly to the central police station. And there, while one of the officers got in touch with the tramways department, the others took turns trying to open the lock. But the lock refused to yield. They were still working over it when Mr. Fenwick arrived.
"This is it, gentlemen. I only hope the money's still there."
"The lock's still closed, isn't it? That simply means no one could open it."
"None of us here could make the blooming thing work, sir."
"No? You just take hold of it like this, see?
Aye.
And you insert the key. Good Scott. The treasury notes. They're not in the bag."
Though every indication pointed to the fact that the bag had not been opened, that it could not possibly have been opened, nevertheless, the money was missing. And while this was remarkable in itself, it was no more remarkable than the bag's disappearance from the bank through a door that was locked and guarded. The £800 were never found, and neither was the solution to the strange mystery, a mystery incredible but true.
We hope you enjoyed our presentation of The Burglar of Blackpool, episode of Incredible But True. And with that being said, let's move on.
Now, we mentioned earlier that our co-host Jessica would not be on this episode. And obviously, she isn't. So, for that reason, we will not be having our recommendation and advice segment, because we prefer to have all three of us for that.
But we feel pretty confident that our listeners are smart enough to make good decisions without us, at least between now and our next episode.
Yes. And on that note, and because our listeners are very intelligent and understanding, we are going to go out on a limb and ask for a small favor. So, if you enjoy the Forgotten News podcast, please give this show a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes.
It really means a lot to us whenever one of our listeners posts a rating or a review. It warms our heart every time that one of you does that. Honestly, we really appreciate you for taking the extra time because of the fact that reviews are extremely helpful in giving us a push upward in the ranks.
In addition, your positive ratings and reviews are very appreciated since they help new people to discover our show. And then they can hear the stories that you hear.
And for that reason, 5-star ratings only. I'm going to repeat that just to be clear. 5-star ratings only. Also, one more thing. If your favorite streaming service or listening app carries this show and lets you give a rating, please give the Forgotten News podcast a 5-star rating on there also.
Now, in addition to ratings and reviews, we love hearing from you directly. So, if you have any comments, suggestions, or other feedback, simply send an email to forgottennewspodcast@gmail.com. We are also on Facebook and Twitter, and you can leave comments there. Just use the search feature and you'll find us.
By the way, everyone, if you are a regular listener, I'm sure that you know exactly what I'm about to say. But if you are a new listener, I want you to know that you can contact and interact with me on Twitter and also on Facebook. My Twitter handle is @KitKaren. Let me spell that for you. @KitCaren. However, on Facebook, it's a little different, and it might be a little tricky because there are a bunch of people with names that are similar. So, if you use the search feature on Facebook, you should be able to find me, but you need to type Kit Karen, except with a hyphen in between. In other words, type K-I-T hyphen C-A-R-E-N, and then you should be able to find me on Facebook. They could also look it up on Pages, because technically I'm a page. I'm not actually a profile. There is also a link in the show notes in case you get totally lost or confused. Feel free to give me your comments, compliments, or criticisms on Twitter or Facebook. By the way, I am always completely open and willing to hear from any of our listeners. Seriously, all of you. Everyone who is out there listening. Hey, you can even slide into my DMs. But just be nice, okay? Don't be salty or mean. And if you follow that one rule, I guarantee that I will respond. So, does that sound like a deal?
Now, listeners, in case you haven't already figured it out, we are giving you all of these different ways of contacting us because we truly like hearing from you.
And we mean it when we say that.
And, well, with that being said, it's time to wrap up the episode.
Wow.
Yes, we're done. Or almost done.
It's just as well. After all, no one wants to hear a girl talk too much about anything, right?
I'm pretty sure that our listeners like your voice much more than mine.
Well, since we haven't taken a survey, I guess I'll have to take your word about that.
Our email is pretty clear.
But, instead of just wrapping up this episode in a cookie-cutter sort of way, I'm going to take a minute to share a weird historical fact. Because it's too short for a mini-episode, and we don't have enough free time to investigate as to whether it's actually true.
Just FYI.
So, for anyone who might be interested, here's a weird fact for you.
An alleged fact.
Okay, here it is. If there is a statue in a park of a person on a horse, and it has both front legs in the air, that means that the person died in battle. But if the horse has one front leg in the air and one on the ground, it means that the person died from wounds that they received in battle. However, if the horse has all four legs on the ground, it means that the person died from natural causes. It means that the person died from natural causes.
I guess it also means that the sculptor or somebody decided that this person needed to have a statue on a horse.
Yes. But listeners, aren't you glad you now know all that?
Well, of course you are.
Now, the whole thing is probably a myth. But we choose to believe it because life is more fun that way. And it's just one more reason why I always say, history is no mystery.
Goodbye, everyone, and thanks for listening.
Seriously, listeners, thank you, all of you. You're amazing.
Listeners, thanks for sticking with us, despite our intermittent delays and other unexpected problems. Thank you.
So, okay. Bye-bye, everybody. That's it for now. We'll talk to you again very soon. And be sure to listen to our next episode. It's around the corner.
Honest.
We promise.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
This episode was recorded before a live audience of
us.
Thank you for listening to the Forgotten News Podcast. You will now be returned back to the present day, and we hope that we can count on you to join us for our next episode. Thank you.
Not one person in 1,000 ever says anything that is truly worthy of the dead.